morning, my friends. Good morning and welcome. You are listening to Wednesday's edition of Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Whalen. Very excited to have you with us here today, as always. It's Wednesday, April 12th, 2006, about 8:01 a.m. here in the Central Time Zone. And certainly a lot of stuff going on out there in the world, my friends. This hour, of course, is brought to you locally by our sponsor, Deborah Settlemyer, and yourenergyteam.com. For energy solutions and information on great products like SomaLife GHP, as well as these amazing LifeWave energy patches, which I have on again today, call Deborah at 602-717-5047, or you can go to the website and request some more information at www.yourenergyteam.com. So we left off last hour with a story about Venezuela and their involvement in some pretty significant drug trafficking. Now, again, this is important, folks, because the conditions are ripe for Venezuela to be invaded. Now, let me postulate this story. This one came out yesterday, CaribbeanNetNews.com. It says, it's a letter to the editor, and it says, as comment on your story that the Netherlands Antilles is worried about an attack by Venezuela. When last year I saw the beginning of the buildup between the United States and Venezuela, I also noted an extension being done on the Hato Airport in Caraco. That extension is being done by the U.S. military to accommodate the biggest transport warplanes. Put one and one together and understand that Caraco is being prepared to be part of a launching for the American war against Venezuela. Who doubts that the Netherlands and its Antilles is nothing but a vessel of the U.S. military? Better think twice. Here in St. Martin, we will soon entertain the 5,000-member crew of the airplane carrier, meaning aircraft carrier, the strike group that's headed down there, as I told you about. We will soon entertain the 5,000-person crew of the aircraft carrier with our dozen hardcore sex clubs. How is that for a hypocritical policy from the United States where sex clubs like these are illegal? At about 1,000-kilometer distance, at least I have little to worry about from an attack by Venezuela, but I detest that we provide entertainment for those who are hostile to my friend Hugo Chavez and one day may wage war upon him. I look forward to the soon-to-come meeting between Holland and Venezuela's politicians. So in essence here, the Netherlands Antilles is a location that's a place where the U.S. would launch an invasion against Venezuela from. Those preparations are already being made. The airport extension is being done to allow for bigger planes to fly in. So think of this scenario here, folks. Again, Iran, Venezuela, Russia, and China all at the same time, perhaps. I think it's certainly possible. If we can basically, using stealth bombers, get into Iran, get into Russia, and get into China and hit them all at the same time, those are the biggest enemies that we've got, the biggest nuclear threats, except for, of course, North Korea, which is a wild card. So anyway, I think that maybe it's distinctly possible that if the situation in Iran is going to happen, they have to back up contingency plans, not just for Iran's response, but for various nations' response to a U.S. invasion, be it preemptive or retaliatory, be it Israeli preemptive strike or Israeli retaliatory strike or a U.N. Security Council resolution. We have to factor these things in. So it sounds to me like very serious considerations are being made to address the problems of China, Venezuela, Iran, and Russia. With Venezuela looking more and more likely to actually be invaded, as Hugo Chavez has been saying for a long, long time. These are very important stories, folks. And again, if you missed any of it, you can go back into the archives here for the last 2 hours and listen to the plethora of news stories we have dropped on you, indicating that these things are not just a possibility, but they're happening as we speak. Stay with us. We'll be right back for more Frankly Speaking Radio right after this. Good morning and welcome. You are listening to Wednesday's edition of Frankly Speaking Radio. I'm your host, Frank Whalen. I'm glad that you're here today as part of this global broadcast brought to you, of course, by the Republic Broadcasting Network. As we mentioned, the archives from the shows available to you cost-free at rbnlive.com. You can listen to them, see if there's anything you like, pass the word around to you and your friends and people you know about, you know, the different things you hear. It's important that we got to spread the word about these things, folks. Information, when it's kept to yourself, I think, is truly one of the greatest crimes you can commit. Simply because awareness, knowledge, these things are powerful things. And the truth, more powerful than all of them. And the truth in regards to areas like Scripture, just immensely important. And that's what we're going to talk about today with our good friend Martin Zender. We'll bring him up here in a second. But first, required bits of information for you. The phone number, 800-313-9443. Our website, as always, franklyspeakingradio.com. And Martin Zender's website is martinzender.com. I wholeheartedly think that, as I said earlier in the program, that Martin Zender's writings are probably some of the most important writings available anywhere on any subject today in the world. And I think that as time goes on, Martin Zender will be celebrated for the genius that he is. Now, a lot of people find his content to be very controversial. There's a reason for that. It's because they've never heard it before. And whenever you take somebody and you say, here, stand on this pedestal that's been created for you by your home life, by your family, by your traditions, by your church doctrine, and let me shake it a little bit, people are going to get a little seasick, a little nauseous, a little upset. Okay? That's what happens. So if you, I challenge you today to hear these things, to research it for yourself. Most people like to exist forever in the realm of skeptic. They like to just hear something and say, I don't believe that, but never make any effort to prove or disprove it. That's unfortunate. There are the rarities out there. There are a lot of people who became very good friends of mine, people who listen to the show here locally, who initially heard some things that they just did not want to believe. And they researched it in order to prove me wrong and ended up having that confirmed for themselves. And it was just a very big eye-opener for them. Now, Martin Zender's here to talk about the scripture here today. If you want to weigh in with your thoughts, you're more than welcome to do so. But here's the thing, folks. I don't want to have an on-air argument. Okay, it's not a debate. We can set up a debate in the future, but that's not the point of today. If you want to dispute or debate Martin Zender's information, then you have to do yourself the favor of getting his books, reading it, and addressing it point by point. Because here in a two-hour program, we do not have the time, especially with commercial breaks, and my incessant chiming in, to address these things at the depth that they need to be addressed. But it is important to do so, and we're going to do it today, and here's why. New York Times, April 7th. An early Christian manuscript, including the only known text of the Gospel of Judas, has surfaced after 1,700 years, and it portrays Judas Iscariot not as a betrayer of Jesus, but as his favored disciple and willing collaborator. In this text, scholars reported yesterday, the accounts of events leading up to the crucifixion differs sharply from the four Gospels in the New Testament. Here, Jesus is said to entrust Judas with special knowledge and ask him to betray him to the Roman authorities. By doing so, he tells Judas, quote, you will exceed, end quote, the other disciples. Very interesting. Jesus confides to Judas in the document, quote, you will be cursed by other generations and you will come to rule over them, end quote. This was made public at a news conference at the National Geographic Society in Washington. Although some theologians have hypothesized the good Judas before, scholars who have translated and studied the text said that this was the first time an ancient document lent specific support to a revised image of the man whose name in history has been synonymous with treachery. The debate is not over whether the manuscript is genuine. On this, scholars agree. Huh? Unanimous agreement on the part of scholars that this document is genuine. It is authentic. The controversy, they say, is over the relevance to the information. Already, some scholars are saying that this gospel sheds new light on the historical relationship between Jesus and Judas. The 26-page Judas text is believed to be a copy in the Coptic language made around AD 300 of the original Gospel of Judas, which was written in Greek the century before. Scholars have long been on the lookout for the Gospel of Judas because of a reference to what was probably an early version in a treatise written by Irenaeus, the Bishop of Lyons, in 180. He was a hunter of heretics and no friend to the Gnostics, whose writings proliferated in the 2nd through the 4th centuries. Irenaeus wrote, quote, they, meaning the Gnostics, I guess, produce a fictitious history of this kind, which they style after the Gospel of Judas, end quote. So he validated the existence of the Gospel of Judas back in 180. Unlike the four standard Gospels, the Judas document portrays Judas Iscariot as alone among the 12 disciples to understand Jesus' teachings. Karen L. King, a professor of history of early Christianity at Harvard Divinity School, who is not involved in the Judas Project, said this gospel might well reflect the debates that arose in earlier centuries. She said, quote, "You can see how early Christians could say if Jesus' death was all part of God's plan, then Judas' betrayal was also part of God's plan," end quote. The standard gospels either give no motivation for Judas' betrayal or attribute it to the pieces of silver or the influence of Satan. At least one scholar, James M. Robinson, said the new manuscript did not contain anything likely to change traditional understanding of the Bible. Dr. Robinson, a retired professor of Coptic Studies at Claremont Graduate University in California, was the general editor of the English edition of the Nag Hammadi collection. He says, quote, "Correctly understood, there is nothing undermining about the Gospel of Judas," end quote. I see that a little bit differently, my friends, for a bunch of reasons, but let me finish the story. Dr. Robinson noted that the Gospels of John and Mark both have passages that suggest that Jesus not only picked Judas to betray him, but actually encouraged Judas to hand him over to those he knew would crucify him. In a key passage in the Newfound Gospel, Jesus had talks with Judas, quote, 3 days before he celebrated Passover, end quote. That is when Jesus is supposed to have referred to the other disciples and said to Judas, quote, "But you will exceed all of them, for you will sacrifice the man that clothes me," end quote. By that, scholars say, Jesus seems to have meant that in helping him get rid of his physical flesh, Judas will act to liberate the true spiritual self or divine being within Jesus. Officials announced that the Codex would ultimately be returned to Egypt and housed in the Coptic Museum in Cairo. For now, the Gospel of Judas will be the center of attention in a television show, magazine article, two books, and an exhibition by National Geographic. Well, folks, you can see this is very, very important, because if you start questioning Judas's role in Jesus's betrayal, and I'm not saying that you should not, but I'm saying if you question it, this does challenge some doctrine. Not necessarily, it doesn't contradict things in the other Gospels per se, but what it does do is contradict some elements of church doctrine. And those elements would be, first of all, the idea of free will. And secondly, the idea of eternal damnation, of a hell where you'll burn in torment forever and ever for all time. Amen. Now, you say, well, why is that? Well, again, I have to ask you this. If it was predestined that Jesus was to die for sins of all mankind, and it was, does it really matter who betrayed him? Does it really matter who put the nails into his hands and his feet? Does it really matter who turned him over to authorities? Not necessarily, because it didn't have to be the Jews. It could have been a wandering band of gypsies. It didn't have to be Judas. It could have been Tom Cruise, you know, in his Scientology time travels. Who knows? The point is that it is necessary to happen for the salvation of all mankind. So when it does happen, someone has to be chosen for that to happen. And if that person is chosen by God, how can God, a just and merciful God, take that person and condemn them to eternal damnation in hell? How can you rationalize this? It's hard to say. So you can see that there are many, many, many angles that this story addresses in a very subtle manner. But when you open that door, all of a sudden you start to question all of church doctrine, and you have to ask yourself some questions here. Now, as I said, extremely controversial information, obviously, but I ask you to listen, to follow along, and to get your Bibles out, and you will see that our good friend Martin Zender will deliver the goods as he always does. Now, Martin has written a number of incredible books, all of which I wholeheartedly recommend. I would put these books in the top 10 every time. Now, here's why. This world is tied in knots, folks. It is an absolute mess, and the reason why it does seem so hopeless all the time is because it's God's way of breaking the world down, of making a situation so untenable, so unlivable, so unable to have hope in the situation that we're in today, with the dozens and dozens of news stories I just gave you today, basically laying out the outline for the forthcoming Third World War. It should be very apparent to you that this is overwhelming. Why is that? Because we're engaged in a spiritual battle. And if that's the case, then you have to have appropriate armaments for the conflict that you're in. Okay, for example, you don't bring a knife to a gunfight. Perfect example. You don't bring a lack of faith to a spiritual battle. It just ain't going to happen. Doesn't matter. It's going to go down the way it's supposed to. But the point of the whole thing is that a lot of people in the media like to focus on the problems. Focus, meaning their predominant attention is on that area. I also like to talk about the problems because I think it contextualizes the solution. And the solution in all things, folks, is faith. It's the spiritual side of things. It's God's love for mankind. Okay? That's really what it's, that's where it's at. I, like you, probably have briefly flirted with putting a little bit of faith into an institution, into an organization, into a group, into a club, whatever the case may be, to even human beings. And consistently and constantly let down because these are all flawed institutions. These are all flawed individuals, flawed groups, and so on and so forth. So where is faith placed where it never lets you down? And that's in God. So we have to address the solution here, my friends. And the solution, as we said here, is a spiritual one. Martin Zender, go to his website, martinzender.com. Read about his books. And then, again, folks, I encourage you, buy these books. They will change your lives. Stay with us. We'll be right back with our special guest, Martin Zender, and more Frankly Speaking Radio. Welcome back, folks. It's Wednesday. You're listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. I'm glad you're here with us today because our very special guest, I've convinced him, I have threatened him, and he has agreed to set aside some time for us here today. As I said, folks, I think that honestly, directly, this guest has probably had more personal impact on me as a writer than anybody else I can think of. His books are incredible. They are the following. How to Quit Church Without Quitting God, Martin Zender's Guide to Intelligent Prayer. Martin Zender Goes to Hell and Flawed by Design. And from what I understand, a few things in the works, too. But I don't know what he wants to talk about, so I won't broach those subjects. Ladies and gentlemen, our good friend Martin Zender. Martin, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Frank. Thank you.
Man, it is a privilege, as always, to speak with you. I'm very excited. I think this Gospel of Judas issue certainly raises the bar as far as spin that the churches are going to have to go into in order to counter this.
Well, I'm just glad it has come up simply because it gets people to thinking again about issues that affect us all. Because if Judas is a test case of what God is going to do with people, then if God can save Judas, and if Judas is part of his plan, then, you know, I can wake up fairly certain that I'm part of his plan as well. So,
yeah, I'm telling you. I mean, no matter what you do with your life, you didn't betray the Son of God, you know, personally. You know,
you yourself
were not instrumental in Jesus' death personally. So I think that, yeah, given the state of things, there aren't many sins and atrocities you can commit on this life that, you know, would even be comparable.
I just love these test cases. You know, everybody puts up Judas and Hitler
as
the bad guys, and
sure,
Mother Teresa as the ultimate example of goodness, and Frank Whalen.
You know, I don't know about those.
They mention Frank Whalen in the same breath with Mother Teresa.
They do not, except to say, you know, Mother Teresa was a good person, whereas Frank is going to be excommunicated any day now.
Right.
Maybe something like that. I have not yet been excommunicated, Martin, and I'm looking forward to that day. So.
Well, that's because, you know, you walk out before they can kick you out.
That's probably what it is, but I just kind of figured I'd get one of those official Vatican letterhead things at some point. Hey, you know what? We have a lot of groundwork to lay down, because let's discuss Judas in general. As I mentioned sort of at the end of my last long-winded segment there, it would seem that Judas has always presented a certain amount of problems for people. Because, again, if you want to believe that God is merciful and God is great and God is certainly above and beyond patient, then you have to say, well, obviously he knew full well when Jesus came down to earth, the whole point of it was for Jesus to die. So eventually somebody had to be instrumental in that death. It was, even if it was an accident, if he was hit by a runaway mule, somebody who was holding the reins on that mule, somebody would be accountable in some fashion. Judas outright betrays him. So, you know, again, although it is a necessary prophetic event, it had to happen. People say, well, you know, Judas has the worst of all sins. You know, Judas is the first one to be punished. And that's always kind of been a theme, is like, look, you could end up like this guy. And you mentioned Hitler as well. Excellent point as well. But certainly for the prophetic angle of Judas, this has always been the way that they propose the hellfire, damnation, eternal torment type of thing. And yet now the possibility that Judas was in the loop on this idea of the plan, saying it is as it a absolute necessity, regardless of the Gospel of Judas. The whole point is how do people rationalize this free will thing with, you know, God's will?
Right. You know, first of all, I'd like to clarify one thing that
okay.
Even while people put Judas forth as the utmost transgressor, actually the Apostle Paul saved that title for himself. In 1 Timothy, I believe it is, he calls himself the foremost sinner, the chief of the sinners in the King James Version. And so, not to get this topic off Judas, but mm-hmm. Here's a guy who was fighting God premeditatedly. I believe in the case of Judas, Satan himself had to possess the man because he had not the sufficient backbone to carry out this task, which indeed God had predetermined him to do. But actually, Paul is the worst sinner that ever existed, and we see an example of God in a moment changing somebody's heart and turning them around. And the startling thing with Judas is that God didn't do that with him. Christ did not turn him around when he could have. And Christ did encourage him, what you must do quickly. It was prophesied 1,000 years before Judas's birth that he would betray him. Jesus said, that the one who I give this morsel shall lift up his heel against me. Psalm 41:9. Here Jesus is quoting it in John 13. 1,000 years before Judas was born, this very act was foreknown, set into action by God, and carried out. And as you said so well in your, quote, long-winded soliloquy, it was inspired, by the way, I thought. It was long-winded, but it was very, very good. You bring up the hard questions that we're going to answer. We're not going to talk about them. We're going to answer them.
Sounds good, my friend. As always, so grateful you're here. Folks, stay with us on the edge of your seat through this quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back with our guest today, Martin Zender, and more Frankly Speaking Radio. My friends, glad you're here today and fine Wednesday morning here. And our good friend Martin Zender is joining us. Check out his website, martinzender.com. And I've included some information there on the website, things that might be of interest to you. Of course, links to Martin's website. And I asked Webmaster James to also post that article I just read from about the Judas Gospel, which, again, really opens up some old wounds in church doctrine, wouldn't you say, Martin?
Yeah, because Christianity on the whole cannot accept that God would purposely bring an evil person into the scene. They're shocked. That's why they say this Gospel of Judas is a discrepancy with the Scriptures, because they're not reading the Scriptures in the right way to begin with. They're not seeing those passages that said all the events of the Passion of Christ happened in accord with the counsel and foreknowledge of God, and that would include the treachery of Judas Iscariot.
Mm.
And Jesus didn't do anything to stop it, as I said before the last break. And God himself raised up this man to do this. We know, and Christians don't believe this either, that God created both vessels of honor and vessels of dishonor. passage in Isaiah that said he created the ruiner to harm. He created the ruiner, Satan, to harm. He does these things purposely because this is the big picture, Frank. This is what I know you want to get to. God has to create his own adversaries. There was a time when he was alone in the universe and there was no opposition. And anybody who writes a novel, any author, any playwright knows that to have a good story, to bring out the moral character of your protagonist, you must have an antagonist. There's no other way to do it. Who wants to read a novel? It's all good guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't learn anything about human nature, about the goodness in man through God, that is, mm-hmm. the goodness God can work through mankind, unless we have adversarial forces, and God himself creates his own adversarial forces.
Well, yeah, he would have to, because nobody has the ability, the authority, or the power to really present any sort of legitimate opposition.
Well, so, people say that Satan does, but then again, who does Satan answer to?
And who created Satan?
And
obviously.
Who created Satan? Yeah. I create a ruiner to harm. King James says the waster to destroy.
Wow.
And I create evil. We've talked about that verse
yeah.
many times. God creates evil, and the word evil is, in the Hebrew, dabar, I think it is, and it simply means to break. It means to break. God creates things to break situations, and as you so rightly said, he does that in order that he can heal them and make them stronger.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just think about, just there has to be some element of balance, really, in all of God's creations, you know, day and night, and so on and so forth. You know, I was talking to somebody about that the other day, about daytime. They said, when the sun comes up, we know it's daytime. You know, obviously, unless you live in certain places where things are a little screwy. But the point is it's a certain amount of balance. Let's say, for example, you wake up and there's air. But let's say at nighttime, there's no air. Okay, so you get out of bed, there's air, and then at nighttime, there's no air. You probably appreciate air a lot more, okay, than right now, for example, when we all have air to breathe and it's not a big deal. If you have asthma, you probably greatly appreciate the ability to breathe. You know, you look at somebody with leprosy, for example. Maybe they don't have a limb. They would love to have a broken foot. They would love to have a foot. So it's all perspective. You got to have a little perspective. And I think if everything in life was perfect, there would be we would be bored, and we wouldn't really appreciate the blessings that we get. You have to have a little bit of opposition, a little bit of hardship, a little bit of problems, so that way we can be lifted up, so that way we can realize, as you put so well in your book, Flawed by Design, God breaks us so he can lift us up to impossible heights, to the point where we say, there's no way I could have done this on my own.
Right, and where people can't accept this with Judas is that they see his end as eternal torment. So as you stated, the problem, and this is a problem in the Orthodox mind, it just blows their mind because they say, well, if that's true, that God purposed this whole thing, wow, what a shocking revelation. God's behind everything, you know. That should be God 101.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a 5-year-old can understand that God causes things. God is behind everything.
Sure.
If he is, and if Judas ends up in the Christian version of eternal torment, then God's responsible for it. But
well,
I say that this is not the end of Judas. Now, he's going to experience woe, as Christ said. He says, woe to the man through whom the Son of Man is being given up. This is where I would disagree, getting back to the Judas gospel, that you will exceed other disciples. That might be true in a sense, but there was a definite a penalty for Judas, and there would be woe that would come to him, and he would perish, which exactly what happened. He died. He's not going to be accounted with the 12 disciples when the kingdom is set up. There's 12 thrones in the 1,000-year kingdom. Judas lost his place, and that place was filled by Matthias when they drew lots after Judas hung himself.
Wow.
So Judas is going to lose a lot. I'm not saying that he's not. And so let's get that straight now before people say, Martin, Judas is just going to waltz back to God. No problem. Hey, you betrayed Christ. That's all right. I made you do it. We're going to let bygones be bygones. Well, look, even though God did inspire it, even though God was behind it and Christ didn't do anything to stop it, Judas is still going to be judged for what he thought in his heart. He didn't know all these forces that were on him. He didn't realize that Satan himself, according to Scripture, entered him. The only place in Scripture, Frank, where Satan himself entered a human being. Because I believe this is why. Satan himself did not trust that Judas was of sufficient moral character to betray Jesus Christ.
Wow.
It's the only, John 13:27, and after the morsel, after Christ gave him, then Satan entered into that man. And Jesus then is saying to him, what you are doing, do more quickly. Well, let me tell you what I think about this. I think that maybe Jesus at that point is talking to Satan and not Judas, because
oh,
it's
wow.
no longer Judas we're looking at.
That's
right?
True.
It is no longer Judas we're looking at.
Hmm.
It's Satan himself. Never, the first and only time this has ever happened. And because we're at the crisis of universal history in John chapter 13. This is the crisis of universal history. The whole universe is pivoting on the events that are happening within 2 square miles of Jerusalem.
Mm.
This thing has to go down. And
yeah.
as you say, Judas was the one chosen to do it. It could have been anybody, but in God's foreknowledge and his wisdom, he chose this man. Now, it's a bummer for Judas, because he's not going to get into that thousand-year kingdom. But the thing is, people think that's the end
mm-hmm.
of the man. There's no more in store for Judas, because mm-hmm. he forfeited that. But I disagree.
Yeah, there's so many different angles to approach on this. And just as a side note, you know, you mentioned about him being lifted up above the other disciples. It is intriguing because, you know, you might call somebody a Judas, you know, the same way you would call him like a Benedict Arnold, but you wouldn't call somebody a John. You know what I mean? Well, I mean, a prostitute customer you would, but not in biblical context.
Yeah.
You wouldn't call somebody a Peter. You, Simon Peter. It just doesn't happen. So Judas is certainly a part of the culture more so than the other disciples, I would say.
Right. And as you say, he is part of the culture. Just watching the movie Jesus Christ Superstar, I really like that film because the writers, Andrew Lloyd Webber and Mr. Rice, whatever first name is, it's such insight because they dealt with the case of Judas, and they have Judas crying to Christ, you know, does he love me? Does he love me too? Will he care for me? When I'm cold and dead, will he let me be? Does he love me? You know, and then Judas sings this song, and Jesus Christ, Superstar, always gets me. I just start crying when I hear it. Don't just say I'm damned for all time. You know, he's saying that you knew that I was going to do this. I'm paraphrasing the whole thing, and I'm sure not going to sing it. you're the one who saw everything,
mm-hmm.
Christ. I did it because I had to, he says. That's one of the lyrics. It's fantastic. And then he says, don't just say I'm damned for all time. And he's not. He is not damned for all time, because Jesus Christ died for all mankind, including Judas Iscariot. And again, if God is behind everything, and let they have somebody call today, and let them tell me God is not behind everything. Let them call. I dare somebody to call and tell me that this threw God for a loop, and he had to come up with plan B.
Well, and that's when we start getting into, again, you briefly touched on the concept of eternal torment, which we've sort of addressed on the show before, maybe not in its totality. And considering we are about 45 minutes into our 2 hours today, I don't know if we're going to have time for all that. But we do have to address something you just talked about, which is things throwing God for a loop, God being unprepared for certain events to take place. Now, when you give the fact of not just every human being on the planet right now, Martin, but every human being who has ever existed on this planet for all time up to this point, as well as all human beings who will exist on this planet, God having to contend with the myriad of decisions that every person faces all day long. And that's every day of every year of every life of all time, past, present, and future. That's a lot of erasers that he would have to use on the old blackboard to fix everything. So at some point, you have to just step back and say, well, we've got a really complicated answer and a really simple answer. The really complicated one is God has to contend with free will. God has to adjust his grand design based on every little plan we make, or the more simplistic and therefore probably more likely scenario, which is predestination.
Yeah, and you know, the whole thing that really angers me is that the normal average person who can still think for him or herself sees God as kind of this bumbling old man with a beard who's running around the universe putting out fires.
Mm-hmm.
And who gave them that notion of God? The Christian religion has. They've given him the notion that Satan is setting these fires all over the place, and God, what's going on in Sector C? My gosh, I got to get over there. So he runs over and puts out backfire. And what? Satan did what? And he runs over. Adam did what? Oh, no, my primo creation failed. And so I got to run over there and see if I can fix that. All these crazy things, and God is looked upon as this old bumbling man, and I hate that. And the reason I hate it is because I know that people got this notion not from the world.
Mm-hmm.
World's smarter than that. They got it from the Christian religion.
You know, in particular, if I can jump in here, and again, just tell me to shut up, man. You can.
You jump.
All right.
Just jump.
I want to talk about this. This is something I didn't know. About Arminians, and not to be confused with people from Armenia, but rather Arminians. Am I saying it right?
Yes.
Okay. And that's sort of where we get our Christian beliefs today, I believe. And if I'm wrong, it's because I've misinterpreted some of the information I got from you.
Oh, God forbid.
No, I just...
No, see, this thing is named after this guy named Joseph Armin.
Okay.
And so it just came after, just like Calvinism came
right.
After John Calvin.
Exactly.
You know, and then you got Whalenism and Zenderism and Whalenists and Zenderists, all this crazy stuff. So it just named after people
right.
who championed these various viewpoints. So
go ahead. But see, I'm looking at, I believe, an unreleased book. Now, I'm not sure if I'm talking about it or not, but
yeah,
you know.
The one that I wrote?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's called The Really Bad Thing About Free Will.
Incredible. You know, every time I read one of your books, I'm just astounded by it, and I always think this is the best one so far. This book, I think, is so important, Martin, because you touch on all the biggies. Every single aspect of every single angle on free will, all contained in a beautifully done little 70...
80.
Is it 80?
Yeah.
No, it's not 76, man. 76 page book. I'm looking at it, man. 76.
Well, I fluff it up at the end with some advertising.
Oh, yeah.
That, other
all right. Okay. Well, in that case, it's 80.
The publisher says, give me 80 pages.
Yeah. And a couple of blank ones at the beginning, you know.
You know. Yeah.
No, but this is an astounding good book, and it's not available to people. So, as always, my friend, I'm extremely honored and privileged to be able to have read this before, you know, most of the public out there. But you talk about this Arminian belief, and this is the belief by which modern day doctrine is based on. Is that correct?
Right. Let me say this about this book. Will be available in a month or so.
Oh,
as
man.
Printers, you know,
that's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, the Arminian viewpoint basically says we already, quote, know that most of humanity is going to end up eternally tortured for eternity in spite of Christ coming to die for them. So, therefore, we have to make them responsible for it. The
right.
Calvinists see all these verses in Scripture that say, well, yeah, God, only God can give a person faith. If God doesn't give it to you, you don't get it. Nobody is seeking out God, no, not one. And so they see these verses, they run up flat against them, and they say, well, God's responsible for a person having faith or not. Therefore, God sends people to hell. And it's just, well, that's fine with them. The Arminian viewpoint, however, would say, boy, that's not fine with us. We're not going to make God responsible for this. We got to somehow shift the blame to humans. We're going to make it their fault. So when they get to heaven, they're not going to say, God, you're the one who hardened my heart. What was I supposed to do? Nobody's going to be able to say that. Mm-hmm. So as a knee-jerk reaction, they develop the doctrine of free will. We're going to make the human responsible, which is not a scriptural leg to stand on.
Really?
No, not a script. There's not one verse in the Scripture that proves free will. There's verses show people willing, and there's people doing things, but there's nobody showing that if they're doing it freely. You see, if you do it freely, then you must be doing it apart from God, apart from Satan, because, I'm sorry, if God influences you at all, if Satan influences you, you're not free. A free will is an uninfluenced will. Now, somebody call and tell me that nobody is influenced from without, but I'm sorry, as soon as you are,
you know, and you mentioned a story in the book about you being at a Bible study, and somebody basically, you know, was saying that you know, I'm born again because I believe in Jesus or something like that, and you kind of really just, you know, not in a harsh way, but you did say, hold on a second, let's explore that, and you kind of, you know, pinpointed the different aspects of it. Can you maybe give us some idea of that conversation?
Well, it was the fact where I wanted this guy to admit that it was him, the guy, that ultimately decided his fate, that Jesus just provided the opportunity. Why are these people still giving credit to to Christ. Oh, thank Jesus for my salvation. Why do you do that? Because according to your doctrine, Jesus only made it possible for you to save yourself. He died on the cross, but that didn't save you. That didn't redeem you from sin. Otherwise, the guy at the altar call wouldn't say, come forth now and save yourself. So this guy, I finally got
him to admit. What would the priest say?
Well, that's what they do say. They say
no, I mean, if he was going to be honest.
What they should say.
Yeah,
if they're going to be honest, they should say, Christ has saved you at the cross. And they should quote, like, 2 Corinthians 5. It says, one died for the sake of all, consequently all died. You are saved. Jesus died for your sin now. What's your reaction to that fact?
It's pretty powerful.
Not here's what can happen to you if the price is right.
Ah, okay. Now we're getting into some interesting areas. Stay with us, my friend. And, folks, you guys stay with us as well. We'll be right back with more from our special guest, Martin Zender. Listening to Wednesday's edition of Frankly Speaking Radio. Amazing. We're almost at the end of our third hour here. Folks, our guest today, Martin Zender, is with us. Martin, we are talking about free will and basically eternal damnation in context of these Judas gospel that has recently been released. And it's such an important thing. And we're really just talking about other things, such as, you know, looking at your book here. You say that if the church has really wanted to espouse what they truly believe, they would say something along the lines of, all of you need to come on down here to the altar and save yourself because Jesus didn't get the job done.
Right.
That's in essence what they're saying. Is that, and you say it so well, that Jesus did 99.999, you know, and so on, percent of the work. But, you know, you, with that tiny, minute little decision in your life, have the capacity to undo the salvation of humanity.
Right, and you have the capacity to make it effective for your life. So what does salvation come down to? It comes down to you. That's the honest message they should be giving. That's false, but to be consistent, that's what they should be saying. And all these nines to the right of the decimal point is just whitewash. Jesus did 99.99999% of it. Well, you know, cut with the nines.
Yeah.
Because all you're saying is that my .00001 gets me saved. What's the difference?
Yeah.
If it's .0001, or if I do 99%, what's the difference if my end of the bargain, and that's how they present salvation, as a bargain, as a deal between you and God, and you better do your part, or the cross didn't work for you.
And you quote a number of different sources, tracts and religious writings from prominent and very well-known sources, who basically even contextualize it as such. They say this is the good news. You have to do something. Whereas in my mind, and I think you say it even better in your book, the really good news would be if I didn't have to do anything. Right. Because I'm a lazy man, Martin.
Yes, well, I tend to that myself. But the good news is that Christ did it. He accomplished a work at the cross. One died for the sake of all. Consequently, all died. 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Now, we are given faith to accord with what God already did. That's the big difference between what Christian religion tells you. They tell you that faith is the dime that kicks out the gumball of salvation.
That's great, man.
Yeah,
I like that.
I like that, too. I'm going to put that on a bumper sticker.
Well, you know, you got to account for inflation. I don't think you can get a gumball for a dime.
You can't get, right, you're right.
Maybe
see,
quarter.
I came up with this a long time ago.
Oh, I see.
I have to revise it.
So, adjusted for inflation in parentheses.
Yeah, this is what they're making faith, the dime that kicks out the quarter, the 50-cent piece that kicks out the gumball. But that is not the gospel. The gospel, you do have faith. You do acknowledge Christ, but this is a result of him saving you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the cause of him saving you. Which came first, see, the salvation or the faith?
Mm-hmm.
The salvation did. Then the faith responds to what he did, you see. It makes this a whole different thing.
You make an incredible analogy that I want to talk about, and we're coming up on another break, unfortunately. So a brief analogy, briefer anyway, and also excellent, was the concept of Jesus pulls into your driveway in a car.
Yeah.
And he beeps the horn to get your response. You mentioned the house could be on fire, you're laying there unconscious, and Jesus just beeps horn one time. Enough to say, I did my part, now you got to do the rest of it. You save yourself, in essence, and that's what this is. That's what the whole church doctrine is through free will. You have to do it. You have to do the work. Jesus, the Son of God, sacrifice for all of mankind, isn't enough.
Not
it's insulting to me. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.